Freight Up.
Hello and welcome back to Freight Up, the freight and quality podcast of Freight Investor Services. I'm Jess, and we'll be navigating our major freight and bulk commodity markets together. We'll be joined by Ben Klein giving his regular update on the freight markets, followed by a discussion with Archie Smith and Lewis Jones on the latest trends shaping the fuel oil market, and finally how pay on iron ore and coking coal. Let's first look at the latest news and index movements of the last 2 weeks. The unemployment rate in the euro area reached up to 6.3% in December 2024, rising slightly from a revised record low of 6.2% in November, in line with market expectations. Meanwhile, the eurozone economy unexpectedly stalled in Q4 2024, marking its weakest performance of the year. This follows a 0.4% expansion in Q3, which analysts originally forecasted as a modest 0.1% growth for Q4. However, instead of expanding, the economy flatlined. Adding to the concerns, the bloc's two largest economies contracted. Germany's GDP shrunk by 0.2%, while France dipped by 0.1%. Italy, on the other hand, remained stagnant for a second straight quarter. On the inflation front, price pressures ticked higher. The annual inflation rate in the euro area rose to 2.5% in January 2025, up from 2.4% in December, slightly above expectations. This marks the highest inflation rate since July 2024, signalling that inflationary pressure remains a challenge. Turning to central banks, the Federal Reserve held interest rates steady at 4.25% to 4.5% during its January 2025 meeting, as widely expected. After three consecutive rate cuts in 2024, totaling a full percentage point, the Fed has now paused its rate cutting cycle as it assesses economic conditions. Meanwhile, in Europe, the European Central Bank lowered its key interest rates by 25 basis points in January 2025, also in line with forecasts. This brought the deposit facility rate down to 2.75%, the main refinancing rate to 2.9%, and marginal lending rate to 3.15%. Back in the US, inflation data showed a slight uptick. The core PCE price index, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, rose by 0.2% in December 2024, matching expectations and inching up from the six-month low of 0.1% in November. What about the market movements of the last 2 weeks? Let's take a quick look. So over the past 2 weeks, we've seen a mixed performance across products with a general downward trend in most cases. The C5TC index has experienced a decline, dropping from 10,647 on the 21st of January to 6,998 on the 4th of Feb, signalling some weakening. Similarly, the S10TC and the HS7TC have followed a downward trajectory, with the 710TC falling from $6,848 to $5,615, and the HS7TC slipped from $7,854 to $6,679 over the same two-week period. However, the P5TC bucked this trend, recovering from $6,736 on the 28th of January to $8,112 on the 4th of Feb, after an initial drop from $7,862. Overall, the market appeared to be softening, with the P5TC standing out as the only product showing some rebound. Next, we have Hao, our analyst from Shanghai. Hi, Hao.
Hi, Jeff.
We'll start by asking what the impact of the two cyclones have had on supply of iron ore during earlier this week.
It's reported that two strong tropical cyclones warmed into hurricanes over the Sea of West Australia this week. And so far, both cyclones moved out of the coastal areas, which is far from the major shipping lanes as well. So on late Tuesday, and I think at late afternoon today, both ports recovered operation, which was a few hours ago. But we haven't received official letters, but we see some of the news popping out. And however, I think Rio Tinto has estimated shipping loss already, but there's several analysts saying it's 100 million tons of iron ore shipment at most for the impact during the last 3 days and weekends. People are thinking and trying to speculate a bit on this because Rio Tinto will announce the details on February 19th about its annual production and Q1 production estimates. So that's why people are concerned about it. And from my perspective, the impact should be a niche to the oversupply of iron ore, because China still have 150 million port stocks of iron ore, which was a seasonal high and a 2-year or 3-year high. And in addition, we see India demand is entering a light season from mid-February. So I think many ships will be delayed instead of lost. And on the worst circumstance, given 150 million tons of loss, the overall supply to Asia looks still big in February and March. In general, I think iron ore was in an oversupply condition in entire Q1. And I'm thinking the price is not sustainable at the current level unless some other extreme weather like heavy rains and or cyclones happening in the next few weeks.
So we've talked about US tariffs with Ben during the freight section, but what are the impacts of the tariffs imposed on US coal from China?
I think the market is pretty diverging on the understanding of the coal market. I think, first of all, we all know US announced a 10% tariffs on all goods exported from China, and then China imposed a 15% of tariffs on coal products exported from US. I think in short run, as we saw, since China is one major buyer of US coking coal, a tariff increase means more coking coal is going to squeeze into the Australian, or in other words, our Pacific prime coal market, so which leads to an oversupply as well as a drop on the FOBCC price over the past week and this week. But I think in the long run, if China is importing more Australian prime CCs instead of the US, so which could provide enough support for the Australian coking coal. And for China, domestic coking coal, the supply from Mongolia and Russia and other countries were still very sufficient in 2024, so, and which is expected to remain high growth in 2025. So the decrease of secondary CC was less significant. I think the major point was still on the prime CC market. I think when the construction season comes in April, plus the low price in Australian coking coal, I'm not negative, but I'm even slight positive on the current low price of FOB Australian coking coal. I think there could be some room for the coking coal to uptick if we look in the longer run. It should have a better cost efficiency.
Very informative as usual. Thank you very much, Hal.
Thank you, Jess.
Welcome back to the podcast. Ben, you're here to break down the latest developments in the dry freight market and key pricing trends from the past reporting period. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. Always good to be here, Jess.
All right, let's jump straight in. The big headlines from this last reporting period has been the new rounds of tariffs announced by the Trump administration. How has that played out in the freight market?
Yes, big news for shipping and commodities. As we all saw over the weekend, Trump signed the 3 executive orders, 25% tariffs on Canadian and Mexican imports, plus the 10% levy on Chinese goods. And while the Canada and Mexico tariff has been delayed, China has already hit back with its own tariff and even hinted at possible sanctions on US firms like Google. I mean, that said, I would say that China's response seems quite measured. They're basically leaving room for negotiation instead of escalating this into full-blown trade war.
All right. And if these tariffs were to move ahead without any further delays or last-minute deals coming up, what kind of impacts are we looking at for global trade and more specifically the shipping industry?
Well, yes, it's still early, but some effects are inevitable. Higher costs for goods and slower economic growth are almost guaranteed, especially with the tariffs on China, given its central role in global trade. And for shipping, it's a mixed bag. On one hand, reduced demand due to higher prices could hurt the seaborne cargo volumes. On the other, if supply chains are forced to adapt, we could see shifts in trade routes, potentially increasing ton-mile demand as goods travel longer distance. So while overall volume might dip, the distance travel could offset some of this decline depending on the sector.
Okay, so if we switch gears to the Pacific, traditionally this period is a little bit quieter because of Chinese New Year, but has anything noteworthy surfaced?
Yes, as you say, despite the seasonal slowdown, there's been some data releases worth noting. China's manufacturing sector shows sign of cooling, with its Shaoxing Purchasing Managers Index coming in at 50.1. And that's the weakest expansion since last September. That's a step down from 50.5 in December. And, you know, while it's still technically in growth territory, basically over above 50, the downwards trend is concerning. Even if the official government PMI slipped into contraction recently, this suggests that China's industrial activity and export momentum are under pressure, which could, of course, ripple through the dry bulk market. And again, given the Chinese outsized influence on dry bulk demand, especially for commodities like iron ore and coal, its slowdown is likely to weigh on the freight rates in the near term.
And finally, could you please talk me through the movements in the FFA market over our last podcast period?
Yes, there was modest recovery in the last week of the Cape market, while pricing regaining losses from the previous week, bringing them roughly in line with the levels from our last podcast. As of yesterday, the Cape Feb contract stands at 9,100, up from 8,375 on the 21st of Jan, from the reporting period low on the 24th of 7,500, while Q2 is at 17,800, up from 16,275 at the time of our last podcast. The Panamax market followed a similar pattern with a Q2 contract, initially dropping after our last episode, but rebounding last week with a 25.3% increase over the reporting period. And as of yesterday, was printing at 11,625. And that's marking the highest level seen since November. Meanwhile, Supermaxes remained relatively stable throughout the period, while the Feb contract priced at 7,000 as of yesterday.
All right, Ben, thanks for that update. Always great insights.
Thank you, Jess. Always a pleasure.
Joining me now is Lewis Johns, fuel oil trader at Neruda Capital, and familiar face Archie Smith, a regular guest and fuel oil broker at FIS, who will unsurprisingly be discussing the fuel oil market. They'll be unpacking the impact of Russian sanctions on high sulfur fuel oil. So Lewis and Archie, it's great to have you here.
So yeah, I'll just give a quick little synopsis of what crude's been doing recently before I hand over to Lewis to start up the bit more of an in-depth discussion about the high sulfur complex. Overall, since Trump's been in and this year, crude futures have been under pressure. We've come down from sort of 81, 82 levels in the front month futures down to now today, actually sub 75. Most recently, we've had a delay to tariffs that's added downward pressure on prices after, I guess, successful talks, if that's the correct word, with Mexico. So those tariffs have been delayed a month. However, I think looking ahead, there is still a lot of uncertainty around the crude futures, especially now with China putting 10% tariffs on US crude imports as sort of a retaliation. It'll be interesting to see if this develops into a real sort of trade war environment. But that was just a quick and brief look at what crude's been doing. And now I just want to hand over to Lewis to start talking a little bit about the high sulfur markets coming out the back end of 2024 and into this year.
Yeah, thank you, Archie. I mean, well, this month's been incredibly busy so far. Russian sanctions have somewhat provided a perfect storm to the market. If you look at Singaporean high sulfur fuel oil, February 80 fuel oil cracks are at multi-year highs. Last week, trading up to minus 40 cents. You're seeing positive 180 cracks off the back of that, whilst we've slightly softened going into pricing. You've got high sulfur bunker sales continually growing as a percentage of the total, alongside some supply constraints, and it's leading to a perfect storm, given you've got booming demand, and at the same time, a massive proportion of the fuel oil flowing into Singapore is being sanctioned.
Yeah, just a quick one on that. Why do you think it's been more sort of visibly aggressive on the Asian side of things? Obviously, you mentioned the 380 more so than kind of barges and stuff. You know, we know both Asia and Europe rely heavily on Russian barrels because of their sort of higher sulfur content. You know, it's a lot of sour crude coming out of Russia. Do you think it's been more aggressive in the Singaporean complex recently because Europe has sort of already adjusted to a lack of Russian flows post-Ukraine war?
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of the nail on the head. I mean, at the end of January, that 380 East West traded up to highs of sort of $35 a ton. Which,
yeah, that was crazy.
It's massive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, for one, the European market's been incredibly strong over the past 6 months. I think prompt barge cracks have been in single digits since mid-September. The European market's also adjusted to a lack of Russian barrels and material post-Ukraine and weaned itself off of that, while Singapore is, to a degree, very dependent. So that's why you're seeing the impact mainly on 380 structure in East West and obviously 380 cracks.
I think another thing worth mentioning is obviously going a little bit back to what I said at the start with Trump. He's been pretty adamant on the fact that US are going to pump, and there's going to be a lot of sort of domestic output there. From what I understand, a lot of the US crudes are a lot sweeter. So I think, you know, if Europe looks to sort of, well, as it already has, the US, I think, has filled quite a big supply gap that Russia left. And it's a lot of sweeter crudes, lower sulfur content coming over to Europe, which obviously has more of an impact on like 0.5 supply and less sort of high sulfur able to be refined from those sort of barrels.
No, definitely. And I mean, yesterday we saw, whilst the US Gulf Coast is a relatively small market in terms of hedging for end users, I mean, there's massive implications for tariffs on that market. And yesterday we saw the high sulfur up whipsaw trading into minus 75 cents a barrel, trading back out to minus 180 at the end of close, which is, you know, over a dollar a barrel move. It's significant, and there's a lot of macro uncertainty, right? So
what do you think about the high fives as well? Sing high fives, Euro high fives. Obviously, you know, looking at a lot of our clients do have scrubber fitted vessels or are looking at getting scrubber fitted vessels. So, you know, what's happening over there?
At the time of recording, we're seeing the March Sing high five around $83 a ton. Whereas if you look further out to Q4 25, we're valuing that around $107 a ton. That just indicates how strong demand is for high sulfur for the first half of the year. Looking at last year's Sing bunker sales, they were for one of the highest on record and up 6% from Cal 23. High sulfur itself, sales were up 21% year on year. And the VLSFO, they were somewhat softer, 3% lower than Cal 23. So high sulfur is growing as a marine fuel and the share of sales is clearly constructive. In December of last year, we're looking at high sulfur share was 43%. That's a post IMO high. And more broadly, the Q4 of 24 share was 41%. That's up 3% from Q4 2023. Consistent demand for, as you've said, scrubber fitted vessels and the contango shape of the same high five curve. It just, yeah, it's very constructive for bunker sales in Q1 for high sulfur specifically.
For sure. And for me now to address the listeners, if there are some of our trading clients here or guys who are looking to trade with us, the high five markets are a very good tool for hedging sort of scrubber fitted vessels and managing the scrubber economy. So, and what I want to say is they are super liquid markets, they're liquid products with a lot of market participants in them. And so, you know, the high fives, if anyone's got any questions on high fives, you know, please feel free to reach out. We can quote those and trade those, absolutely no issues. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention, Lewis, since you're the star guest?
Yeah, on high sulfur, you know, it covers a lot of what's been driving the market. Yeah. It's worth maybe mentioning the potential Suez reopening, the implications on 0.5 VLSFO bunkering demand. As of present, we're seeing an incredibly strong European 0.5 complex. Feb March Euro rallied for all of last month from lows of sort of $4 or $5, last trading $14. Whereas pricing in the physical market, the cash versus MOC print was $28 yesterday. I mean, it's very, very strong.
You think that's been a main sort of another big factor that's been dragging that, that was dragging that Feb March Euro spread up as well, was the differential cash
for
MOC?
Sure, for sure.
Yeah.
Where is pricing now? But I think it's just a tight market. It's also helped in the Feb East West weakening. We saw last month it came off from, you know, $42 mid-January to right on the lows of $33 a ton a couple of days ago. Whilst people are optimistic that the Red Sea is going to resume, I think we really need to see, you know, the Joint War Committee of Lloyd's categorize the area as lower risk. It's currently a high risk area still. So I think people are going to be sat on, still willing to go around the Cape of Good Hope until we see a material change in circumstances. However, short term, it looks like we might be turning a corner.
100%. And I think one thing I'm just going to end it on as well is on the topic of canals, I think it'd be interesting to see how it plays out with obviously Trump has made statements about how he wants to retake the Panama Canal. Obviously, I find it hard to argue that's had any impact on the fuel market. But if something like that did go ahead, I think it'd be interesting to see how market participants sort of interpret that and what happens there.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Thanks, Lewis.
All right. Thanks, both of you guys. That was an informative segment. It's always good to have guests on. So thank you for joining us, Lewis. And as usual, thank you, Archie.
Thank you, Jess.
And that's it for this podcast. Make sure to subscribe by clicking the subscribe button on wherever you get your podcast. Also, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn or get signed up on our app, FIS Live, to make sure you never miss any freight and commodity analysis from FIS. Thanks again for joining us, and we will be back in 2 weeks with Freight and Commodity Podcast, Freight Up. Freight Up!